97.9 FM, WCHL, and the UNC College of Journalism and Mass Communication presents Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. Sports Focus is dedicated to in-depth examinations of issues of overarching importance in the sports world. Each week, we'll discuss problems and look for solutions to problems in professional, collegiate, and amateur sports. From Carroll Hall on the UNC campus, here's your host, journalism professor Charlie Tuggle.
Welcome to Sports Focus. Our topic today, the latest developments in the UNC academic scandal. Our guest, John Shelton Reed, Professor Emeritus of Sociology at UNC Chapel Hill. We're speaking to him, he's in England, via Skype. John, a couple of things have happened just this past week. Number one, the NCAA reopened its investigation into UNC, into the athletics program. And Athletics Director Bubba Cunningham put out a statement basically saying that the NCAA is reopening its probe, talking about UNC having retained Kenneth Weinstein to do his investigation, and then saying, consistent with NCAA protocols, we will have no further comment on this matter until the process is complete. And that has been South Building's stance, that as long as the Weinstein investigation is going on, the people who run the university will have no comment. So what's your general thought about this no comment stance that we seem to have taken for the past couple of years?
Well, that's the thing, Charlie. They took it when they didn't have to, and they missed a great chance, I think. I'm really very sad that it's come to this. I'm sorry that the NCAA is coming back, although, you know, maybe it'll be an occasion for some serious reform, but this could have been avoided if the administration had simply said at the get-go, you know, we're going to find out what's here. We're really going to get serious about it. We're going to find out everything we can. We're going to self-report to the NCAA, and then we're going to invite them in to have a look around to make sure we got it all. You know, if they had said that, people would have believed we were serious about addressing our problems, that we recognized, you know, what a disgrace we had been subjected to. As it was, things had to be dragged out of the administration bit by bit, you know, and that's, anybody knows anything about public relations, and I don't know much, knows that that's the wrong way to handle this kind of thing.
John, you know, you'll see postings on stories related to this, comments from the public, and they run the gamut from the people who are accused by other people of being Kool-Aid drinkers, and yes, you know, and then those who are on the other side who are, well, UNC cheats, we've been telling you this for years. But the in-between people who seem to have a reasoned approach to it, I heard from one of my former students who I think sort of summarizes that middle ground, and he said, nothing could be worse than spinning the wheels on this garbage. This should have been wrapped up a long time ago.
Well, I certainly agree with you, Charlie. I know what you mean about the message boards out there. I first wrote a letter to the chancellor expressing some dismay back in January, and I got a reply from the provost dean, you know, basically telling me I didn't know what I was talking about, which in fact was true. I didn't know what I was talking about. He had me there. So I started, you know, I'm retired, I got time. I started reading up on it and following the message boards and, you know, Devil's Den and Pack Pride and all the rest of it inside Carolina. And, you know, there's some wackos out there on both sides. I mean, some real conspiracy theorists, black helicopter guys, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've sort of, my position obviously is kind of middle ground because I'm getting hit from both sides. The true blue loyalists, mm-hmm, are unhappy with me for, you know, washing dirty linen in public, as some of them put it. And of course, the others are unhappy with me because I suggested that the Carolina way wasn't entirely a fraud.
John, let's get to that phrase, Carolina way, because, yeah, you know, the athletic rivals of UNC hate that phrase. And oh, yeah, Carolina has always used it as a source of pride. So what has, you asked the question, what has happened to the Carolina way?
Well, right. I wrote a little essay with that title, and I wrote it for my own purposes. I tried to put my thoughts in order, and then I shared it with a few friends, and they told me some more things that I put into it, and eventually somebody said, you know, you ought to publish this, and I said, well, where? Somehow I got hold of, Jim Hebner got hold of it and asked if he could run it in Chapelboro, and I said, sure. So it has been run. The point is that a couple of things. First of all, I think it is, I hope it's a nuanced view of this. I mean, the Carolina way is a phrase that drives people at Duke and State crazy, just drives them nuts, and I can understand that. And you know, the reality was always less chaste than the myth, as I said in the essay. There were, you know, ridiculous courses that people took to keep them eligible. And it wasn't just athletes that took them, but, you know, we all knew what those courses were. And we were, but basically the Carolina way, a phrase that I don't particularly like, but it wasn't entirely a myth. I think it came about under Dean Smith. Smith took over in 1961, as you know, when Frank McGuire went down amid a bunch of scandals of his own. And I think Smith was smart and cautious, and he said that's not going to happen on my watch. So he brought in tractable players, guys who could be coached, and he kept a close eye on them when they were here. And in the basketball program, at least, there were very few arrests. And guys didn't make the papers much except in the sports pages, but brought them in, kept them eligible. They took some of these silly courses, but at least the courses met, you know, and players did the required work.
And then things changed. And let's talk about how they changed when our discussion continues on Sports Focus.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now, back to the show on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back to Sports Focus and our discussion of the latest developments in the UNC academic scandal. Our guest is John Shelton Reed, Professor Emeritus of Sociology. John, before we jump back into the discussion of what happened at Carolina and when it happened, let's talk very quickly about the second big development this past week. The first was the NCAA reopening its investigation. Number two, former reading specialist Mary Willingham has now filed suit against the university. Does that surprise you at all?
Well, it rather surprises me that she wants her job back, because I, if I were she, I wouldn't come near the place. But, you know, she may very well have done some things she shouldn't have done. I don't know. I'm not on top of that. But the problem she's pointing to are real problems. And rather than attacking her, the administration, I think, should have said, you know, sat her down and had a chat with her and said, look, we'll have to look into this and you know, tell us what we ought to look for, and not reflexively assume that she's trying to slander the place.
John, in your essay, you pointed to four things that sort of converged and things started changing as a result of that. Those four things are: Dean Smith retired, President William Friday's influence started to wane, the ACC expanded, and then you think UNC's faculty and administration's view of their roles changed. Will you explain that?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I was last on the faculty in the 90s. And as I say, I retired in 2000. And in 1989, exactly 25 years ago, an ad hoc committee of the Faculty Council under the chair, chaired by Doris Betts, comprising former presidents of the Faculty Council and members of the Chancellor's Advisory Committee, a number of heavyweight, I think it was 10 of them, heavyweight scholars, I mean, names that anybody from that era will recognize, they sat down to prepare a report about the role of athletics at Carolina. And actually, they talked about athletics and higher education in general, because it's not just a Carolina problem. That needs to be made clear. People say everybody does it. Well, I don't know if they do or not, but, you know, we used to take some pride in not being like everybody else. But anyway, Doris Betts' committee looked at this, came up with 32 recommendations. My point is that I find it hard to imagine the present-day faculty council, having looked at them for the past 6 months, find it hard to imagine them producing such a report. I mean, if they wanted to, they could take the existing report and say, we're going to look at those 32 recommendations and find out why nearly all of them have been flushed down the memory hole, why nothing's been done.
I wonder if that report is in some warehouse somewhere next to the Lost Ark.
You might think so, but actually it's online. If people go to Chapelboro, to my essay, Chapelboro put a link to that report embedded in my essay, and you can just go on and read it. And it's literate, it's thoughtful, it's sober, it's realistic, it's even funny in a place or two, because I think Doris Betts wrote it, and she was one heck of a writer. But this is serious, and the men and women on that committee were serious men and women. What we're getting now from the faculty council is happy talk, you know.
One line in your essay that I'd like for you to expand upon is, you say that when other flagship schools were becoming to college athletics what Chicago, Boston, and New Orleans are to municipal politics, we were happy to be Minneapolis. Huh. We didn't want to be Chicago, but then there came a time that we were trying to be Chicago.
Yeah, we weren't perfect, you know, and Minneapolis isn't a perfect municipal government. I mean, they make compromises. You have to make compromises to get along in the world, but they weren't as corrupt. I've lived in Boston. I've lived in New Orleans. Never lived in Chicago, but I heard about it. You know, Minneapolis is clean compared to them, and we were clean compared to the Auburns and Georgias of this world. But Charlie, we're never going to, I mean, I try to be a realist. You know, we're not going to move down to Division III. I mean, we're going to keep playing Division I athletics, and we're going to try to be champions from time to time, especially in basketball. It's harder to do in football and maintain your integrity because the numbers are different. But that's what I talk about in my essay. But for 30 years, I think we did it pretty well. We didn't make too many compromises. We made some, and I talk about them, but I think there were ones that most of us could live with and pretty much ignore, you know, and we did for a long time. And it's not going to satisfy the purists that really, really want us to be squeaky clean. I mean, there are people who'd like to see us, you know, have club sports. I mean, that's not going to happen.
Well, you talk about when the things started to expand, if you will, that we started to expand the stadium, that we put a greater emphasis on football, that the ACC itself expanded. And at the time, Bill Friday, you know, spoke out, as he had for a long time, about the impact of big money on sports, not just at UNC, but elsewhere. And you noted that at the time he sort of became a benign elder statesman, venerated yet ignored. Isn't that a sad state of affairs?
I think it's very sad. I know I'm a great admirer of Mr. Friday's, and you know, that interview of his, there was an interview in the Washington Post, was published, I think, 6 days before he died. It's terribly sad. He talks about his dismay at what he sees as the humiliation of the university at the hands of its athletic program and the boosters. And he said something along the lines of, you know, people don't want their lives to be judged by how many times their football team wins. They want something else on their tombstone.
We'll return to our discussion when Sports Focus returns.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now, back to the show on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back to Sports Focus and our discussion with John Shelton Reed, Professor Emeritus of Sociology at UNC Chapel Hill. And we're talking about the latest developments in the UNC scandal. John, in your essay, you talk a lot about the expansion of the ACC, and it almost sounds like you would advocate that UNC leave the ACC. Do you think that would ever happen?
I'd like to see us talk about it. It's going to be, it would be very hard to do now because we've given our a lot of our rights over to the ACC. I mean, they control the television rights now.
And why would you want to see the university leave the conference?
The ACC, for many years, when I came in 1969, and for many years after that, was a group of Southeastern universities that had roughly similar athletic aspirations, you know. It was the first conference to impose minimum SAT scores for participation, for freshman participation in athletics. That was shot down by the courts later, but we did it, and we told South Carolina goodbye when they didn't want to abide by it. They wanted the standards lowered, and we said no, and sayonara. And we were trying to keep things, I think, more or less under control. But in the 90s, because of some of the factors I talked about, Florida State was admitted. That was a sign, I think that was 1991, Charlie, is that right?
Yeah, I believe, yes.
Yeah, that was a sign of things to come, because they're a big-time football power, always have been, and apparently always will be. Well, and then after the turn of the century, we admitted some more non-ACC type schools. And what this means is that we have to come to terms with it. Either we're never going to win another conference football championship, or we're going to have a top 10 football team with all that implies. I don't think the Carolina way, excuse that expression, friends, I don't think that's consistent with having really big time football. What you got for many years was a team that, you know, you had a good season if you beat Duke and you beat State and you got to go to a bowl game, you know. That's a good season.
John, in your essay, you obviously are calling for change, and you call out some people, not by name but by title, as seemingly not able to or not interested in affecting that change. The Board of Trustees, the Dean of the College of Arts and Sciences, the Provost, the Chancellor, and a question that you raise that I don't think we've answered yet, and I don't know if we're going to be able to answer it yet, today, but why isn't the faculty raising hell about this? Why do you think that's the case?
Charlie, I don't have a clue. It's just a mystery to me. I was one of 31 retired faculty who signed a letter basically asking that, you know, because old-timers always think it was better in our day, but I don't think we'd have put up with that when I was on the faculty. But the faculty just doesn't seem to be terribly concerned, and I do not know why. I've talked about it with some of the current faculty, and you know, Andy Perrin is a colleague of mine, a friend of mine. He's a good man, good scholar. He's done wonderful stuff with great inflation, but I think he's just completely wrong about this. He wants to, you know, he says we've fixed the problems, let's move along and not look back. I mean, that's what you hear from South Building, and I think it's a mistake.
John, I think there is some evidence of some changes in policy, some changes in procedures that would help us in the future. But there are many people who say you can't really deal with the future until you've dealt with the past.
I agree with you. I heard your interview with Hodding Carter, and that was a great interview, by the way. And, you know, I think Hodding's right. It's not just a question of making sure that phantom courses aren't offered again, you know, because, granted, that was a problem, and I think that's been addressed. I think they won't be offered again. That won't happen again, at least not for a very long time. But as long as you're admitting students who are unprepared for college work, you're going to have to find a way to keep them eligible. Now, one way to do it is what they're doing at Kentucky. You let them in, you just keep them for a year, and then they go pro. You know, you can keep anybody eligible for a year.
By the way, John, isn't it interesting that on the day that Rashad McCants made his allegations, another little news item sort of slipped under the radar, and it was the basketball coach at the University of Kentucky having his contract extended for, I forget, X number of years at X millions of dollars. Yeah, so isn't that sort of indicative of the whole thing? And we have about 15 seconds left.
Right. Yeah, it was $7.5 million, I think. Yeah, that's just out of control.
That does it for this edition of Sports Focus. Thanks to our guest, John Shelton Reed. Thanks also to engineer Gary Kirk. And thanks to you for listening. Cheers.
Thanks to Richard Southall, Mark Nagel, and Deborah Southall of the College Sport Research Institute at the University of South Carolina for their research and guidance, and for access to CSRI's international network of sources. Sports Focus is a production of UNC's College of Journalism and Mass Communication.